Blue light not coming. There's the blue light. It's not without you. We're going to open the Senate Education Committee. Today is Thursday, April 20th, 2017. It's nice to have everybody here. We have two informational hearings today, and we had our agenda in place, and then typical things that happen in schools every day. We found out that some people need to go first because they have kids to take care of at home. So that's an important thing to us on the Education Committee. We actually really believe in that. So we're going to reverse the order, and we're going to open an informational meeting on PlayWorks. With that, we'll call our whoever you want to bring up with the front to the
right. Start.
And be sure as we start the introduction, you identify yourself for the record. And
great.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. For the record, Jonathan Blasher, Pacific Northwest Executive Director of PlayWorks. Thank you very much for having me up here today. I'm here just to share a little bit more about PlayWorks. It's a national nonprofit. We have a headquarters in Oakland, California. We have a Portland office reaching Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and want to share a little bit more about who we are, what we do, how we impact recess and social emotional learning in the school day as well as health. So we believe in the power of play to bring out the best in every kid. We're helping to empower the social emotional learning, the physical and cognitive skills that come with that. I have some folks today that'll be joining me to speak to tell you a little bit more about it. But one of the big issues that we see as an organization is that there's been a reduction in some of the opportunities for safe and healthy play, and we're able to have a direct impact on that through a series of different services that we provide. And it's all centered around this idea of play, physical activity, and reclaiming that recess time, which often gets either cut out of school time altogether or is just seen as sort of a frivolous time where nothing good happens other than giving teachers maybe a break and some time to play. So with that, I'd like to call up junior coach Mikey. So Mikey Garcia is a fifth grade junior coach at Scott Elementary, just down the way. Go ahead and have a seat. So Mikey's going to come back up a little bit later, but first, we wanted to invite everyone to play a little game. I know it might be tough to move around, so what we'll do is Mikey's going to teach you a little game that you can play sitting right there at your seat. So Mikey, you want to go ahead and teach the game?
This way.
You can stand right there and just tell them. And everybody that is here in attendance, you can also feel free to play in this little game.
Okay, so in this game, we have three. We have rock, paper, and scissors. So what you're going to do is you have to say rock, paper, scissors, and then you could say shoe or just do right there. And scissors beats paper, and then rock beats scissors, and paper beats rock, and it's kind of an easy game to play.
All right. So are we going to go just best out of one, or we do best two out of three?
You can do best out of one or best out of three.
Okay. So turn to a neighbor. There's a perfect amount. All right, and we'll play up here too. All right, let's go ahead and play a quick.
Sorry, you're stuck with me. Look, he's looking around for somebody else.
Five. All right.
Oh, okay.
Three.
One, two, three.
Oh.
One, two, three.
Oh.
One,
scissors.
Three.
Oh no. Two,
three.
Okay, I'm gonna close my eyes.
I don't know.
Okay. I lost.
How was that?
One, two, three.
People don't want to stop.
Oh, you got her.
Yeah.
He won.
Yeah. Great.
I thought you were gonna go for a rock, and I almost went for rock.
Go ahead and
tell.
Oh, yeah.
She's gonna.
They'll come back.
Again, so I did scissors.
Oh, wait a second. Wait a second.
And then you did paper.
We have to listen.
Sorry, we're not good
at
that.
Instructor. Okay.
After you're done, you say thank you to your partner and give him a high five.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
All right, you can have a seat. I'll call you back up.
Yeah.
We should have said we're playing.
Great. Well, thank you so much for playing. As you can see, that's a little quick game of rock, paper, scissors. That is actually one of the most effective conflict resolution tools that we use in the school. It gives the kids a chance to play, do a quick thing. And a lot of times when we see at the school, sometimes there's conflict over a game like Foursquare and who's in, who's out. And instead of fighting and taking up valuable time to play, they do a quick round of rock, paper, scissors. They resolve it. They're able to jump back into the game. We also see that some of it trickles back home, and parents have told us it's a great way to figure out who's going to have to do the dishes and things like that. So there might be other applications for adults, too. So what I wanted to share, and you can see in the slide here, is the solution that we have, that PlayWorks can help lead to healthy lives. And as we know, healthy bodies, healthy minds, healthy communities. The American Academy of Pediatrics a couple years ago released a study saying, talking about the crucial role of recess in schools, and is a really valuable time to create more positive interactions and change an overall school climate. So PlayWorks has been around for almost 20 years as a national nonprofit. We've been in Oregon since 2009, for about 8 years. We've been able to impact about over 80 schools in Oregon alone. And I know there's about 747 elementary schools. If we can get each one of those to have an active, productive recess time, what we've seen is that there's actually a reduction in bullying. We have a Mathematica and the Stanford Education did a randomized controlled trial and found statistically significant evidence that in PlayWorks schools there was less bullying, there was increased physical activity, a greater feeling of safety, and actually there was reclaimed learning time. So that transition from the playground to back into the classroom was decreased, which added up to about 20 hours of reclaimed time. As we know here in Oregon, we do have one of the shorter school years and shorter school days. So if you're able to add more quality instruction time without having to actually add hours in the day, that's one of the benefits that our program has been able to have. We're excited to find ways to bring new innovative ways to make that happen too. As a service, we can either do a full-time coach, we can do train the trainers models, we have lots of resources and information on our website. So I could sit up here and talk about PlayWorks all day, but I'd really rather have some other professionals that can talk about it. So I'd like to invite Jesse Beeson from Northwest Health Foundation, and we can have Dr. Pepper as well come on up. And I'll let you all say your names for the record, and I'll turn it over to your slides.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Jesse Beeson. I am Vice President of Public Affairs at the Northwest Health Foundation. And, you know, we have been big fans and big investors in PlayWorks for a few reasons that I'll talk about. First, I just want to acknowledge that for over 20 years, our foundation has been focused on advancing the health of the people of Oregon and Southwest Washington. And it's taken about the last 15 years for us to realize that we need to have more focused investments in the things that really get at the root causes of health. And one of the things we've come to understand is that a safe and healthy childhood is critical to really the lifelong health of any individual. And we also know that it's a lot of parts and pieces when it comes to a healthy childhood. And frankly, a lot of those parts and pieces come together at school. And we also know that physical activity is not enough for a healthy childhood, that the social emotional needs of the kids are frankly just as important as the physical activity that they're getting at school. And so when we were looking around for a program to make a significant multi-year investment in, we were lucky enough to find PlayWorks. We like a lot about what PlayWorks does, but I think the evidence here on this slide spoke directly to what we are focused on. In particular, we know that recess for many kids nowadays, without the kind of work that PlayWorks does, can be a scary place. It can be a place where most of the bullying happens, where kids are taunted for their lack of physical ability or any mental health challenges. And so what PlayWorks has shown is that they provide the structure so that every single kid, regardless of their ability, can participate in recess. That recess can be a place where kids' social emotional needs are actually met and they're thriving, instead of it being a place that they're frankly afraid and they hide in the classroom. So for us to see that the social emotional well-being of the child is at the forefront as much as physical activity is when it comes to PlayWorks was a key reason why we decided to make a significant investment. The other thing that I think we are particularly excited about and aligned with PlayWorks is that they don't measure the success by the size of their organization. They measure success by the number of schools that have been inspired by the type of play that they can help schools achieve. So it doesn't matter if it's a PlayWorks employee or a classified staff or a part-time educator or even a principal. They believe, and we believe, that everyone in the school can be empowered to lead this kind of play, that every person in a school, every educator, can become the kind of coach that can lead kids to a positive place when it comes to recess. So that's why we've made the kind of investment that we've made, a five-year commitment, and we hope to continue that past our 5 years, to really challenge them not to say, let's put a PlayWorks coach in every school in terms of a PlayWorks employee, but let's inspire the kind of play in more schools, whether it's urban or rural, big district or little district. And frankly, that's exactly what they've done over these past 3 years. So we're excited about it. We think there's also policy opportunities and policy implications in this kind of play. And so we're very grateful for the chance to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Kyla Pepper, physician here in Salem, Oregon, also mother of a 7-year-old. Happy to have the opportunity to talk about the health benefits, specifically of physical activity. On a daily basis, of course, I see children for their well-child exams or for illness exams. Within Kaiser, we've taken the first step towards trying to categorize how much obesity we're seeing in children. We're starting to catalog how much physical activity they're getting. The American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the Surgeon General all recommend 60 minutes of physical activity daily for school-aged children. What we're seeing in Oregon in our Kaiser internal data is that only about 35% of children are meeting this. So recess, which happens during the day, is a great opportunity to increase the amount of physical activity that our children are getting. I also, you know, want to just point out that I do see the cost of childhood obesity. We're seeing more and more diseases that were once considered adult diseases, so diabetes, hypertension, liver disease, sleep apnea, joint problems, and so increasing physical activity in schools through recess, I think, is a great opportunity for us to try to prevent some of those diseases, and in terms of policy, to also then help us lower the cost of medical care in general in our country, of course. The American Academy of Pediatrics in 2013 acknowledged that recess has a distinct and complementary role different from physical education in a child's school day. I received a stat that about 40% of daily physical activity requirements can be met during recess, and that it's that even a partially structured or a structured recess can be of huge benefit. And so meeting physical education recommendations through added activity and play during recess is a natural opportunity to support the emotional growth of our children, minimize behavioral issues, improve academics, and prevent obesity in children and into adulthood. And from what I've seen, it looks like PlayWorks is an example of a partner we have to help us leverage recess and physical activity together to achieve these objectives.
Thank you. So as you can see, a lot of great benefits. We send out surveys to our principals and teachers at the end of every school year, and 90% of them are saying that they feel like their kids are more focused and ready to learn when coming back in the classroom. That's why we believe recess provides this great opportunity. We're also strong proponents for PE. We expect PE to be in the buildings and PE teachers specifically so that we can work with them. We support the House bill and the Senate bill around PE, and we're wanting to show there's this distinction between recess, physical activity, and PE as two valuable pieces that should be part of it. So that's enough from us talking heads. I'd like to invite Ms. Sherry Waters and Junior Coach Mikey to come back up, and they are at Scott Elementary here in Salem, and they can tell you what it really looks like. And that, thank you. Come on up. So one of the pieces of PlayWorks that we really like is we do a youth leadership program. So Mikey here is a group of 15 students that the older students that come out and work with the younger kids to get that peer-to-peer piece feels really important. As we mentioned, one of the models we have is working directly with schools or also through consultation. So Ms. Waters is an instructional assistant at Salem Scott, and she's out there every day doing all the recess activities. Our coach Jackie comes like a week out of the month to help provide some new games and ideas. But I'll turn it over to you all and let you talk about your experience before and after, and yeah.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and share this. I've been at Scott, this is my 9th year, and when I was out on the playground in the beginning.
And be sure to give your name.
Oh, I'm Sherry Waters.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you. I just remember being out there and just standing and surveying recess, and after, you know, year after year, just thinking, oh, it would be so great if we could play games or have something to do. And I felt just so reactive, like you're just waiting for something to happen. And sometimes I thought what things that were called out by other staff that maybe they felt they should call something out to prove that they're doing their job or something. And then I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, there was a power of play presentation that Playworks did for the school district for professional development. And three of us went there, and when we heard that, we thought, oh, we gotta have this. And we went back to our principal and said, we gotta do this. They said this and this and this, and we played, and it's just, and he said, let's do it. And that was our beginning. We had a team of 13 staff and IAs that we got together, and we just followed the directions. Playworks guided us to get this on the playground with everything we needed to do. And our first year, it was wonderful. And we experienced office referrals at lunch almost disappeared. The teacher said they got 10 to 15 minutes back in educational time when they came off the playground back in the classroom, because we do transitions at the end and we do cheers, and the junior coaches lead the cheers, and that keeps, you know, we have 8 classrooms out there at one recess. That's almost, that's around 200 students, and we do cheers to keep them involved, and they're repeat after me cheers, and they give out golden tickets to those that are ready to go back and learn, and they walk, and we give eagle sightings for teachers that say, my student, they sat down and they just went right into the lesson. So it's been a dramatic change for us. I would say now we're proactive. We have game of the week. We have 3 or 4 core games that the junior coaches lead out there, and we couldn't do it without them. At the beginning of the year, before we get them going, we are back to our regular recesses, and it reminds me that of what it used to be like. And we're so thankful when we get them on the playground. There's like 5 or 6 of them at each recess leading these games. And we got soccer going, castle ball, foursquare, scramble, basketball, and then there's the regular big toy. And the children are free to choose any game they want, and they can go from one to another. And it's just been really good. We have decreased bullying. We used to put 4 to 5 students on the pole, on the wall, you know, when they did something wrong. This is before we got Playworks, and now we don't do that anymore. If there's something that needs to be handled, rock, paper, scissors is like magic. But if more serious things, I have them walk next to me, the IAs have them walk, and we can talk to them. So what'd you do? While we're still playing, surveying, you know, and ask them, you know, what will you do differently? Are you ready to go do that? And then send them back out there. So it's been very, very good.
That's great.
For us.
And how about for you, Mikey? What was it like? How's it being a junior coach?
Pretty fun to helping the kids play games and showing them how to play them, like playing around with all of them. It's kind of fun for the older kids and the younger kids. And then they just look up to you like a leader. And then they just see that if you're, like, doing something, they'll just go, oh, coach, I want to go play with them. And we would, and there's, like, a lot of coaches are out there.
At a time? 5.
Yeah, 5 junior coaches, and we all, like, do the cheers. And once we're confident with the cheers, we just start, doing it we want to do it ourselves sometime, the cheers, and it gets the kids going, and they like it.
And now your mom works at the school too, right?
Yeah.
What does she say has been different for you as a junior coach?
Like in the house or like
anywhere?
In the school. It makes me more like a leader. Like I always feel like a leader because, like, a lot of kids, oh, you want to play with me? Or like I go and, oh, you want to play with me? And then they just like playing with the junior coaches.
Nice. Great. So that's a little bit more of what they're seeing at their school and what it looks like. So in summary, I just wanted to share, again, there's this connection between learning physical activity. Kids can achieve more. Recess is this really valuable time to, again, get that social-emotional impact as well as the physical and cognitive. Recess is happening hopefully every day. A study actually came out that 1 in 4 elementary schools wasn't providing recess for all grades. They were either taking it away as punishment or focusing on different activities. So we're real big proponents for how do you take something that is an essential part of the day and allow that to happen. And we've done this in our urban schools. We've done this in our metro schools. We've done it in some of the rural schools. We've done some work out at the Warm Springs Reservation Tribe as well. So with that, I'm going to turn over. If there's any questions from the committee that we can answer. And again, thank you for your time.
Questions from the committee?
So can you list me a few of the games, Mikey, that you you coach them?
Yeah. It would be capture the cone we play, and we use 5 hula hoops. Then you put one on the bottom, and then 2, and then other 2, and then 1, like a castle. And then we would, the cones, we put 5 down, and then 5 on the other side, and then we make a little line. And then we make our teams, and then we go, and if you get tagged on the other team's side, you would have to go to the side and then do 5 jumping jacks.
What's another one?
What's another one? We do castle ball and then we do 4 square. So it's 4 squares and then there's a line on the side. And there's squares that say numbers on them. And then the number 1 is like the leader, and he gets to start with the ball, and then he serves it. And we play that and castle ball, which is the castles with the hula hoop. And there's a side, and then we have gator balls that we try to throw and try to knock down their castle ball.
Okay. So is there ever time when there's disagreements on one thing, and let's say in 4 square, when somebody thinks that they're not out and other people think they are out, how do you resolve that?
Yeah, how Miss Water said, you can just use a rock, paper, scissors. That, like, mostly solves all of it.
So what do the coaches do besides showing them how to play? Is that the main goal, is to teach the game?
Yes, and we help them, like, get in a single file line. And we have, like, golden tickets that if you're, like, in a straight line, we just give out to the kids, to the lines. And then we do the cheers.
Our junior coach curriculum focuses on teamwork, conflict resolution, and leadership. And so we have a whole series of workshops that we'll do with the youth.
And what kind of cheers do you do?
We do the moose cheer. That one's like the funniest one. And then it's, what's the? My Little Red Wagon. We do that one. That one's kind of funny. And then we do, what's the word? Oh, yeah, the milkshake cheer.
Okay. Do you want to do any of them for us?
Do you want to do them?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Show us one.
Okay. Ready?
Ready.
a milkshake.
Oh, a milkshake.
A sticky, sticky waffle.
A sticky, sticky waffle.
A mozzarella pizza.
A mozzarella pizza.
All of the eggs are broken.
All of the eggs are broken. second.
But that doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter.
We can do it louder.
We can do it louder.
Oh, a milkshake.
Oh, a milkshake.
A sticky, sticky waffle.
A sticky, sticky waffle.
A mozzarella pizza.
A mozzarella pizza.
All of the eggs of the eggs are broken.
All of the eggs of the eggs are broken.
And then, but that doesn't matter.
But that doesn't matter.
And then we do our hands. and we can do it quieter.
Uh-oh. Do it again.
Oh, a milkshake.
Oh, a milkshake. A sticky, sticky waffle. A sticky, sticky waffle.
A mozzarella pizza.
A mozzarella pizza.
All of the eggs of the eggs are broken.
All of the eggs of the eggs are broken.
Are they in a row already? Did you line them all up before you do that? And then they're ready to go back into the classroom.
Yep.
Before some of those transitions were complete chaos, kids running all over the place, punching, pulling. And so giving the junior coaches, those youth leaders, a chance to help quiet the kids down, focus on them, remind them, hey, we're going back into the classroom to learn. It's been a really, really powerful piece. We also had a study done with Echo Northwest, and they found that we had an impact on the meet and exceed rates of third grade reading. While some in PPS were declining, the Playwork schools actually were staying steady or increasing. They were seeing the same with that with some of the math and reading across all grades. And also an impact on the feeling of safety in schools and on attendance. So we've gotten some data back on some of our schools that were seeing an actual impact on attendance, especially some of those chronically absent students that we were contributing towards this factor of what was helping kids want to stay in.
So how does it make you feel to be one of the leaders?
Pretty good, because I feel like all the kids look up to us like leaders, and that's what makes me feel special. They always like have a smile on their face. No one's ever like in the corner like hiding or crying. Everyone's just going out and playing.
And how did you get to be selected? I can tell a little bit why you did, because you have a good attitude.
every month or every season, we all the junior coaches meet up, all of them, and we select who's staying, like who's still a junior coach, and we get like newer junior coaches, and some of them like after like their some of their time is like done, then they give another kid a chance. And we have a little green form that we get before junior coach start, and then we have to sign it, and then it says our strengths and then our weaknesses, and then we give them to our teacher so we can get selected.
They fill out a job application, and they get referrals, and some of our coaches actually interview the junior coaches, and so they definitely have it's a little mini job.
Yeah.
Any other questions for our witnesses here today? Well, I want to thank all of you who came and participated. We had a bill, as you know, that passed just a couple days ago about PE and the requirement for more PE in schools. This can be a big, significant help to that whole thing, from what I've heard. And we look forward to talking to you. And I'll have that's a bill that's very important to the President of the Senate. And we'll make sure that he gets a copy so he looks at this so he hears your testimony. Yes.
We'd like to invite all of you, anybody, to come between 11:30 and 12:30 to Scott Elementary and watch Playworks. At work.
We'll put that down. So
we'll be back June 16th for Playworks Day here at the Capitol. And so we'll get a chance to tell more of the members more about us. And I think we have reserved park space to get some recess. So if folks need a little break from sessions and meetings, we'll be able to go out, stretch your legs, play some four square. We'll bring some tetherball. So Friday, June 16th, we'll be back with a bunch of other Playworks folks.
Probably it would have been good for us all season.
All session,
a little bit of recess.
Recess can happen anytime you want. Yeah. Okay. So again, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Good work, folks.
So we're going to close our informational meeting on Playworks. And we're going to open. We're going to open a informational meeting on reengaging Oregon's out of school youth. And with that, we're going to call up Pam Blumenthal. And you can bring anybody you want, Pam, if you feel like there's not enough people up there with you and you want to be covered.
We've got six of us. We're going to take two turns here. Chair Roblin, committee members, I'm Pam Blumenthal. I'm the director of Links Programs at Portland Community College. Thank you for having us here today to talk about reengaging out-of-school youth. For more than 11 years, I have worked at PCC partnering with school districts to provide education options for young people who have left school without a diploma. In that time, I've seen thousands of students come through our program seeking an alternative to traditional high school. Our Gateway to College and Yes to College programs offer youth an opportunity to finish their diploma or GED in a college setting while simultaneously preparing them to complete post-secondary degrees and enter the workforce. Our students drop out of high school for a variety of reasons. Some of those reasons might be drug use, homelessness, bullying, health issues, anxiety and depression, pregnancy and parenting, or needing to work to support their family. The flexibility and support provided in alternative education settings help meet the needs of students that traditional large high schools cannot. Our programs often have the capacity to serve more students than we have enrolled. However, our enrollment is limited to students who live in districts we contract with. Currently, we only have contracts with 5 districts, but we've had up to 8. Therefore, a student's ability to come back to school after dropping out is determined by where they live. Our partnerships with school districts are contractual, but also based on relationships, and they can change year to year. 2 years ago, a district partner we had for more than 18 years decided to end their contract with us. This left over 90 students per year without re-engagement opportunities. When this happened, it pushed me to find a better way to ensure vulnerable youth have consistent re-engagement options that cannot be so easily taken away. I then engaged with colleagues across the state, some of whom are here today, to develop the Oregon Youth Reengagement Coalition, focused on policy change that will create sustainable support for Oregon's out-of-school youth. We want Oregon to be a place where all young people have the opportunity to pursue the education that fits their needs and their aspirations. Now I'd like to have Nick from the Gateway to College National Network tell you more about how other states have taken this issue on and ensured consistent and equitable opportunities for out-of-school youth.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pam, and thank you, Chair Roblin, and members of the committee for your interest in this topic. My name is Nick Mathern. I'm the Vice President of Programs for Gateway to College National Network. In a few minutes, my colleague from the Youth Development Council is going to paint a picture with numbers of the youth disconnection in Oregon. But I want to preview his comments with one number in particular, 28,000. That is the number at last count of young people between the ages of 16 and 21 in Oregon who are not in school and did not have a high school diploma or a GED. As an Oregonian, as an educator, and as a parent, that's a number that I can't live with. And that is why Pam and I and our colleagues here today, as well as countless other educators and advocates across the state, have pledged that we will not live with this number, that we will pursue all possible means at the local and state level to reduce it. Despite the challenges we face, Oregonians have reasons to be proud of our role as education innovators, and we can use that role to solve this challenge. Gateway to College National Network, the organization that I represent, supports college-based high school re-engagement programs in 20 states around the country. Our programs re-enroll thousands of out-of-school youth every year, and those programs are all based on a model that was developed here in Oregon with the people who are here today. So the problem of youth disconnection is not without a solution. There are many school districts and community partners around the state who are effectively addressing this challenge with local programs and interventions. However, because we have not clearly articulated this priority from the highest levels of state government, and because our school accountability system continues to reward serving only those students who can complete high school on a traditional timeline, we do not provide equal opportunities to all students across the state to re-enroll if, at some point, their high school education gets off track. What we seek is an effort that will benefit all of Oregon's young people. As we have replicated our work across the country, We've encountered other states who are addressing youth re-engagement through innovative policy solutions. For example, we have seen just north of us in Washington more than 100 new partnerships to serve out-of-school youth emerge in 4 short years just because the state endorsed the idea and removed some accountability barriers. In Colorado, we have seen the development of an entire accountability system specifically designed to measure the effectiveness of schools who serve disengaged youth. And in Massachusetts, we've seen the state award bonus points on high school report cards to schools that re-enroll youth who had previously dropped out. There are many good examples to choose from, and there is not a shortage of options to solve this problem. And Oregon has an opportunity to use our stubbornly low graduation rate as a call to action to address this need. We're asking you, our elected leaders, to direct Oregon's educators and our education resources to serve all of our young people, including the 28,000 who have been left behind. And we are proud to have one young person who refused to be left behind with us here today. Alexander McPherson is a Gateway to College alum and a future leader for our state.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I want to say thank you for having me here today, and thank you for your interest in this topic. So I'm going to start today by introducing myself, telling you why I'm involved with this work, and then giving you a little bit of a background on my story and why it is that I believe that Gateway to College and Yes to College are important important programs, and why youth re-engagement is important as well. So as I said, my name is Alexander McPherson, and I'm speaking to you all today from a few different but intersectional perspectives. My first experience with post-secondary education was made possible through PCC's Gateway to College programs, as well as Yes to College. The significance of my college experience is reflected in the work that I'm doing professionally and the level of commitment that I have to advocating for programs like Gateway to College. My my high school experience wasn't traditional, and I was at a point in my life where as many youth, as we all know, as we have all been there, were making decisions that were not in alignment with getting me through high school in the traditional 4 years and into a four-year institution following that. This just wasn't my reality. And as each day went by where I was dropped out of high school and I wasn't engaged, I felt further and further from being successful and to living a life that reflected success. I come from a family of educated people on both sides, both my mother and father. So it wasn't as if I was coming from a place where I didn't see education, but I was at a point in my life where I was not in alignment with education. So my first attempt at re-engagement came through an online experience at Benson High School, where I was put in a classroom for about 5 hours a day doing online work just solely on a computer without any outside support. And I know for myself that I'm somebody who thrives on connectedness, community, and engagement. And in the first re-engagement experience I had, that was not there. My next attempt at re-engagement was actually with Gateway to College when I was about 17 years old. And in the Gateway to College experience, I received one-on-one counseling from my resource specialist and an advisor. And I also formed close relationships with all of my instructors. Now, being the young person I was, I actually dropped out of the Gateway to College program within about 2 terms because of some of the decisions I was making, and I was actually referred by Pam Blumenthal to the Yes to College program, which is a GED completion program. I successfully completed the Yes to College program and received a 12-credit scholarship, and of those 12 credits, I passed all of them, and I went back to Gateway to College to receive my high school diploma. One of the unique aspects of the Yes to College and Gateway to College programs are they have specialized coaching and advising that the students receive from resource specialists and their instructors, and it is formed around a cohort model so that the community and interactions that you're having are with people who may have similar experiences to you and came to Gateway to College for the purpose of re-engaging and getting into college themselves. Now, for me, the college credits that I received while dual enrolled, The dual enrollment aspect of Gateway to College allowed me to receive college credits while I was completing my high school diploma. And upon graduation from Gateway to College, I had about 30 college credits towards my associate's degree. And for me, this was a huge confidence booster. Without the access and opportunity to Gateway to College and Yes to College, I would say that I would not be here in front of you all today, and I would not be a college graduate, a PCC employee, a college student, and ultimately on a path of a successful life. I earned my high school diploma from Gatewood College in the 2013-2014 academic year, and I graduated with my associate's degree a year and a half later in the 2015 and the 2016 academic year. I have since been accepted into the School of Business at Merrillhurst University and am pursuing my Bachelor's of Science there, and I'll be graduating in spring of 2018. Currently, as I mentioned before, I'm a professional working at Portland Community College, directing a student support program that works closely with young men of color in their first year of college, in addition to working with students, sophomore and freshman at Roosevelt High School. In my capacity at PCC and at Roosevelt, I'm seeing more and more of a need for alternative programs that work closely and more intimately with students rather than the traditional four-year cookie cutter model. So that is why I'm here today advocating for re-engagement work and for the Gateway to College and Yes to College programs. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to have the next group of three come up.
Okay. Thank you. And just to notice, they all stood up at the same time. You did a really good job. You have trained them well.
Synchronization.
And whoever wants to start first, I think you probably have it planned.
You got it. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I am Bill Hansel, and for the record, that's the young, good-looking one. I am speaking today on behalf of the Youth Development Council, and many of the members here were part of a team that went to Denver to study some of Colorado's models in re-engaging students. As Nick pointed out, with that number 28,000, I'd like to put that into context for you. You can see here that in 2010, right in the middle of some of the strongest economic distress that our state has occurred, you can see the number of non-high school completers, and that's with including a non-equivalent of a high school degree, was around 36,000. And since that time, largely due to other economic indicators and moves that have been made, in the last American Community Survey, approximately 28,000 16 to 20 or 21-year-olds that are not in school currently do not have a high school degree or recognized equivalent. That represents about 9.3% of all students. Here's a little more information specific to regions in Oregon. This is specifically looking at dropout rates as calculated by the Oregon Department of Education. You can see just on a east to west comparison, and that's east of the Cascades, there's about a 4.24% dropout rate. West of the Cascades is 3.88%. That's a very similar rate, approximately 4. Dropout rates by county range a high of 52.46% by Wheeler in Wheeler County to a low of below 1% in Wallowa County. Wheeler is anomalous at 52% dropouts, and part of that is because Mitchell School District has just recently taken on a virtual school there, which due to the low numbers of students that actually exist in Wheeler County, the virtual school essentially doubles the entire county's student population, and though this particular virtual school has high dropout rates. Typically, the next highest is about 17%. You can also see that that Southern Oregon, the Klamath region, and the coastal regions are particularly hard hit by dropout rates. The reason I call attention to dropout rates is because they are not the exact opposite of increasing high school graduation rates. In other words, you can increase the four-year cohort graduation rate, which is our typical measure, and pull from the, say, five-year completer rates or five-year graduates and never actually touch the dropout rate. And in fact, you can increase the dropout rate and improve four-year cohort graduation rate at the same time. So this notion of re-engagement is a different creature than just simply improving high school graduation rates. It's an active participation in re-engaging youth to educational opportunities in this case, and it may not always equate to an increase in a graduation rate, but that doesn't make it any less important. Ultimately, a five-year high school graduation degree is far more significant than the alternative, which is no degree. And whether you earn a credential in 4, 5, 6 years, again, the significance of that is far less than the alternative of not having earned one. And with that, I will pass it on.
Oh, question first, yes.
Excuse me, handsome Bill. give me the equation. What does the math look like? It's not intuitive to think that dropout rates and graduation rates aren't the opposite of each other. What's going on with those calculations that makes them disparate in the stat that we're looking for?
Vice Chair Linthicum, good question. And one of those is that the a critical difference is that the graduation rate is calculated based on a cohort model. So they're tracking students that enter high school or begin high school at the same time and then track them over a period of 4 years. And that's known as the four-year cohort graduation rate. A dropout rate is an event count that occurs in any given year. So it's not calculating dropouts just within the cohort, but across all 4 years or four classes in high school. The equivalent of the four-year cohort graduation rate would be what's called a non-completer. And that's based on a four-year cohort. But as it turns out, they're approximately equal, about 7,000, anywhere from 7,000 to 10,000 students a year. Also within the four-year cohort graduation rate, non-completers are also considered those who earned a GED or some other type of equivalency but did not earn a diploma. Those are not counted in the high school graduation rate. Students that complete the next year and earn a high school diploma but didn't do it in 4 years are not counted, and those that complete in 5 years are not counted. And that is why efforts are made to improve the four-year cohort graduation rate without looking at the dropout rate or the corresponding non-completer rate, you can pull from these other groups that are actually in fact completing high school, which will inflate or move up your four-year graduation rate while never actually touching a stereotypical dropout or a student that has actually left school. So you can see there that you can improve the four-year rate by moving completers into a different category.
Okay, thank you.
So do we incentivize or disincentivize kids in regular public schools in coming back?
It would be the emphasis on a four-year cohort graduation rate as the single metric by which to base a school's performance on disincentivizes bringing students back, because they're, you know, if you lay out even 6 months, it becomes very hard to graduate within 4 years. Any number of reasons can lead to why a student may not finish in 4 years. And if they have actually disenrolled, there is no accountability incentive for a school district to take that student back. And as tough as it sounds, if it doesn't count towards your four-year cohort graduation rate, then it's as if it doesn't count for anything.
Okay. That's something that's been a concern of mine for a long time. Thank you for articulating that. Okay.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Chris Betneski, and I'm the assistant principal at Pendleton High School. I was formerly the lead teacher, counselor of Hawthorne Alternative School in Pendleton. I would like to thank you for this opportunity to talk about rural issues concerning alternative accountability and alternative school approaches for disengaged youth. Over the years, I've had a wide array of experiences working firsthand with at-risk and disengaged youth. It is this experience that provides me with the insight into current opportunities and the needs of rural areas. As educators, we are tasked with providing every student the opportunity to earn an education that will prepare them to take the next step beyond high school in a manner that allows them to pursue a responsible and productive adult life. However, we must accept that the playing field is often not level and students are not all the same. They don't have common backgrounds and experiences, and they are certainly different in rural areas than non-rural areas. In order to meet the needs of all students, we must embrace differences and provide support specific to these unique differences. As suggested, often these differences and challenges can be more difficult to overcome in rural areas as a consequence of the lack of opportunity and support. Go ahead. I would like to begin talking about rural issues by introducing a photo of Dora Mulkey. Dora is a 2015 graduate of Hawthorne Alternative High School in Pendleton, Oregon. As I speak about the rural issues, I would like to do so through the lens of Dora's journey. Let me start by saying that Dora is a shining example of how effective alternative approaches can be for students who have experienced a myriad of social, academic, and personal hurdles. However, the recipe for success with alternative approaches does not only include the specific program. Rather, there are a variety of stakeholders, including schools, students, family support systems, community organizations, state policymakers, and others who all have to come together. It is no secret that academic disengagement, risk factors such as demographic characteristics, early adult responsibilities, poor school performance, low school attendance, and education stability are often more profound in rural communities in Oregon. As a result, these factors contribute to higher rates of school dropout and student disengagement in non-rural areas. In addition, four-year completer rates are often significantly lower in rural alternative schools because historically poor school performance in those schools that they're enrolled in. Dora, like so many others throughout rural Oregon, grew up in a single-parent impoverished home. There were often times as a young child when she did not know whether or not her basic needs were going to be met. After struggling with attendance, academic achievement, and making connections throughout primary and middle school, she enrolled in Pendleton High School. She had little hope to succeed. It wasn't long after she began her freshman year that she became disconnected from her peers and lost all hope. Dora became recluse, ultimately refusing to attend school, which quickly led her to dropping out. She could be described as disengaging over a long period of time, with the final straw breaking when she began to suffer from debilitating depression and anxiety early on in her ninth grade year. This story is all too common in rural Oregon, with the results, dropping out of high school, being the same, with only the process and individual recipe being different. Without alternative options and supports, many disengaged students lack the opportunity to reengage. Anyone who has worked directly with disengaged youth knows that it is extremely difficult to reengage students back into the same program from which they originally dropped out of. And with a limited amount of resources available to small rural communities for public education, it is difficult to design alternative approaches that are robust enough to serve the unique learning needs of these disengaged students. It wasn't too long after Dora dropped out of Pendleton High School that her mother and her decided to give Hawthorne Alternative High School a try. Continuing to battle severe depression and anxiety, along with the daily struggles of surviving poverty, Dora initially had difficulty reengaging. To her, poverty and school failure were her lifestyle, and not out of the ordinary. I recall having her in class in that first year at Hawthorne, where she expressed her life and career goals to include working at Walmart, stocking shelves for her career, without any desire to leave Pendleton. She went on to say that working at Walmart was good enough for her mom, so it should be good enough for her, a statement she can now can't believe she said. Of course, over the course of the year or so, the staff at Hawthorne was able to help Dora begin attending school regularly, and she started to participate in school's greenhouse project. She began to make connections with students, staff, and community members who volunteered at Hawthorne. Dora told me the other day that she woke up one day near the end of her first year at Hawthorne and realized she wanted something more for herself than simply to live day by day. It was from that moment on she set her sights on graduating high school and pursuing a post-secondary education. She told me that the connection she made at Hawthorne helped open her eyes and that a single connection can make all the difference in the world. In the end, Dora will admit that she was lucky. She was provided the opportunity, in her words, a place where anybody with any type of problem can engage and succeed without persecution. She was provided the individualized supports through an avenue unavailable to her at Pendleton High School at the time. Although Dora was fortunate enough to be able to access alternative school in Pendleton, there are thousands of rural students scattered throughout small communities in Oregon who currently do not have that option. Alternative accountability models like those we saw in Colorado provide more opportunity for students to access supports necessary to facilitate their success. Furthermore, broadening our definition of success and/or school completion and enabling rural districts to band together and creating programs tailored toward combating risk factors such as demographic characteristics, early adult responsibilities, poor school performance, low school attendance, and education stability may be a place to start. Working through things such as transportation and funding issues and creative ways to serve students in neighboring districts will promote the benefit of all communities. Without access to funding, transportation, and programming at the policy level, rural districts will continue to struggle serving students who fall into at-risk categories. We will continue to see stagnant dropout rates, lower percentages of students enrolling in post-secondary options, and the cycle of poverty continue. Placing large-scale influence on and providing unique opportunities of alternative accountability and programs for disengaged students to reengage in rural areas is critical. I'm proud to say that Dora will be completing her AA at Blue Mountain Community College soon. As she's finishing up her school there, she works as a student financial aid officer. Her plan is to continue her studies at Washington State University with the goal of earning a bachelor's degree in interior design. She now aspires to live in a larger community where she can live out her dreams. I'm also proud to say that she credits the support of Hawthorne Alternative High School with providing her a path to that success. And with that, I would like to introduce Carla Gay.
Thanks, Chris, and thank you, Dora, for being willing to share your story. Greetings, Chair Roblin and the committee and members of the committee. My name is Carla Gay. I work for Portland Public Schools as the director of their early warning systems. For the last 20 years, I have worked with many of the people involved in the Oregon Youth Reengagement Coalition, or OYRC, to reengage out-of-school youth in the Portland metro area. As you've heard from my colleagues, there is a need to support re-engagement efforts throughout the state, from rural to urban and suburban. Our collective effort on Oregon Youth Reengagement Coalition and Oregon Youth Development Council put us on the radar of the American Youth Policy Forum, or AYPF. AYPF invited us to Denver, Colorado for a study tour this last February of Colorado's reengagement system. We participated in the study tour with several other states from around the country to learn what their best practices are. Some of the things that we learned are that reengagement is best done centrally within a region so that youth have options. That a statewide policy framework allows for local school districts, both large and small, to customize re-engagement approaches on a platform of support at the state level. That there are multiple ways in which re-engagement can take place. We saw an early college model at a local community college, such as Gateway to College.
We saw a GED to workforce training model based on the youth build model nationally. And we saw a small high school which drew from several local school districts to support students who live in rural areas. Having all options available presents ways in which students can re-engage from ages 14 to 24 and begin eliminating barriers to high school completion. As we learned a great deal from Colorado and other states, we were able to reflect on the current state in Oregon. The current state in Oregon is not quite so shiny as you heard from the 28,000 number that continues to motivate our work. Currently, our system is decentralized and it's based solely on local school district initiative and capacity. There's no accountability or financial incentive to re-engage students, especially for smaller districts with limited capacity. Districts only have to serve students to the age of 19 and don't have to offer more than one option. And there's very little quality control for the options that are available. So what do we need? In this slide up here, what we're asking for is a re-engagement system where school districts would be directed and incentivized to re-engage out-of-school youth, where the funding that comes to the school district follows those re-engaged students up to the age of 21 till high school completion, which includes a GED, and to programs that best suits their needs, particularly for older students who are looking for programs that allow them a stronger bridge to post-secondary training and education. And then finally, accountability. Accountability systems must remove disincentives for re-enrolling out-of-school youth and recognize the success of programs serving youth beyond the 4- and 5-year graduation windows, so that when we say in Oregon all students require some sort of high school education, we truly mean all. Thank you for your time.
Any questions for this panel?
I guess I'm really happy that we have this conversation because I think it has to grow into a bigger conversation. One of the things that was pointed out by some of the data was that the school district that has, or the county that has the worst graduation rate is one that has a large online charter school. And I know that there are a number of districts around the state who encourage students as their only alternative to go get into an alternative school. That takes them off their list and puts them on somebody else's list and improves their graduation rate in the local school where the person went away from, and disincentivizes the other school because they took them off. They don't like to acknowledge that, but it's one of the hidden things in our online charter school program that I think we need to make sure that we have a conversation about, because as we were told by one of our guests today, students who re-engage and the opportunity that they're given to re-engage is an online school sitting with a computer, it doesn't work for everybody. Actually, it doesn't work for a lot of people, but it does shift the burden as to who that person becomes associated with. And somehow we've got to figure out how to, because in some cases it works. In other cases it doesn't. So if you don't have another re-engagement model, there's no incentive to take that student back in the district from which they're in, right? Mm-hmm. So if you learn some things about what kinds of models out there create the incentive, the accountability incentive that you saw in Colorado, I'd love to have more information about that if you can get that to us about that kind of re-engagement thing. And I think what I heard clearly from both the story and from our one student that went through this, that true engagement is a relationship issue, not a whatever the curriculum is. That doesn't mean that the curriculum doesn't have to be clearly at a standard that makes it worthwhile for the student to re-engage, but it means that there has to be a personal relationship between the person re-engaging and the person that's giving the instruction. So how other school states have done that, how we have gotten the individuals that make it work, is really important. You know, I have found from my perspective that when we have vocational classes work really well in places where the instructor can engage with the kids in a way that makes that student feel special.
just having the program doesn't make any sense at all if they aren't the right people there to engage in it. And sometimes we look for simple solutions to complex problems by saying, well, we're offering the programs. The fact that no one wants to be in them doesn't seem to enter into the conversation. And so from my perspective, some of the valuable lessons you've learned in this process are really important to me. And we need to figure out how do we get that to happen. Where do we find those people to re-engage with and to actually talk to these students? So any of that you can do to help us start looking at a plan and a system that would work with that would be really helpful, especially the part that I have felt bad about our Youth Development Council is that we give them very little resources, 28,000 kids. Actually, it's more than that because you go to 24, so that's probably half of them. And no statewide system to encourage counties, school districts, or whatever to engage in finding out how to help them. Mm-hmm. And then secondarily, once they've left, no incentive for anyone to take them on because they aren't going to help any problem that they've already been existing. So they don't help the graduation rate, they don't help anything if we don't re-engage them very quickly. Sometimes they'll help us with the 5-year graduation rate, but they don't. That 6th-year kid, they're just out there in limbo. Yeah. And so it is a moral obligation that we have to figure out how to deal with. You know, at Marshfield, when I was there, the oldest student that we had that we re-engaged was 38, working in a graveyard shift that would come in at school and come to school. We didn't get any money for that person, but that person was exceptionally important for our school because there was a whole lot of kids who said, why are you here? And he said, it's really good to have a high school education. And so it's kind of like, and you're coming every day after you work all night on the bridge? And they said, yeah. I mean, those are great examples in a regular school system to show kids why it's important when we haven't, as educators, been able to show them why it's important. We haven't given them that reason to stay. So I guess I want to thank you very much for being here. We need to continue the conversation and figure out what are those programs and how do we make them systemic, because the problem right now that I see is that we have great programs in certain places, but without the right person, again, who is championing it, we don't have a system. And we continue to try to find solutions for this, which seem globally great, but don't necessarily attack the actual problem. And that concerns me a lot. So any help you have. And yes?
Yes.
Yeah, we do at this time, it passed out of the House. House Bill 2657 is actually calling for a task force to develop a plan which addresses many of the issues that you brought forward about regional strengths and moving beyond the zip code determining your options. That might we're hoping that will be able to really bring together the critical resources necessary for really addressing a statewide plan to that perhaps during better fiscal times might be able to be implemented to the effect of re-engaging students across the state, utilizing the unique local strengths and flavors of the distinct regions of our state. And I just wanted to add, one of the things that was most profound to me during the Denver trip was when we had panels of youth speak to us and they would share their stories, much like you heard today. But without knowing where we had the sites that we had seen or visited otherwise, the youth would mention that they had not succeeded or fit in that program that we had seen that was a very high quality program. And that speaks to that relational piece of that it took many times two different high schools, a different alternative program, and then they found the relationships and the goodness of fit that allowed them to succeed. And it was one of those things that was really powerful to me, just to see how, with, you know, they weren't discrediting that other program, and in our eyes, we'd just seen it, and it was a very high-quality program, but it wasn't right for that unique individual. And the more options we can create, the better we are. And then secondly, to your point, too, without those alternative accountability metrics, we can't distinguish as a state between a program like a virtual program, say, that has an extremely high dropout rate and these other things, against an alternative school program that is just doing tremendously, because of the inappropriate metric by which we judge them or hold them accountable. Yeah, they look the same, and so the more we can fine tune our that. We can then begin to distinguish what is a good and quality alternative program that is serving our youth, and begin to advance those models. So,
as you said, when we get into a better economic time, one of the things that could make it a better economic time is that if 28,000 people had a job that paid taxes and weren't being used in our DHS system, which could help all the way around.
The savings to the state is in the hundreds of millions if you consider the tax burden that these individuals that are out of school and not working pose to the state. So the return on investment is significant, and the human capital is even more important.
And I will tell you
that, yeah.
And the thing that I will tell you that was the most frustrating as a high school principal was that I had the responsibility to evaluate teachers and to make decisions about who was the best person to have there. And it came down oftentimes to methods and how many kids and whatever. But I have never found a teacher that I gave a bad evaluation to and may have chosen to leave the profession who didn't have a couple of kids, who was their single best teacher. It was the one that turned their lives around. It was that same teacher who I was thinking, because the 78 other kids they had in the classroom, we're not feeling that way, but one or two of those kids had found that person to be the single best person that in their life, that was the one that turned them around. It was always such a frustrating deal, but it goes back to, it's all about relationships, and they had something in the way they did something that taught the heartstrings of that child, and it's always been amazing to me to realize that. So thank you. I do want to say something, partly because you went to Denver, and partly because I have a staff member who is also just left that particular area as a staffer in the Education Committee in the state of Colorado, that we were talking just before the deal. And so not as a downer, but as an explanation and from me as a high school principal at the time, a thing to reflect on every year, because it made it more important for me to make sure that I connected with every kid at my school. And that was that today is the 18th. Anniversary of Columbine. Mm. And so I tell you that because somebody missed on a couple of kids. Mm-hmm. And having been a principal in schools when those were happening, mm-hmm. and having really close friends at Thurston and all of the different tragedies that we've happened, I always think of that. And yesterday we had the suicide deal, reminded me of kids at my school who I had a intimate relationship, knowing them well, working with their families who made some of those choices, and wondering what could I have done differently to connect to that person, or found that person that we needed to have in that school to connect to that person to help them make a different choice, is really important to me. And trying to figure out how we institutionalize the ability to make sure that every child that walks into a school finds some caring adult in that school that makes a difference for them. So mm-hmm. I appreciate all of you wanting to do that for the kids that you work with, and thanks for sharing your stories. And I won't do any more. Any other questions? Thank you both for being here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm going to close the informational meeting on reengaging Oregon's out-of-school youth. Look forward to working with all of you in the future, and hopefully we'll see how those bills go. So with that, all of our business is done for the day, so we're going to before that, I'll tell you, next Thursday we do not have a meeting. We have four bills on Tuesday and then another four on the following Monday. Those are posted now so you can see where we're at coming forward. We don't have that many bills. We'll see if we have a few more later
yeah.
as they go through the House. So with that, We are adjourned today, Thursday, April 20th, 2017. Thank you all.
House side?
Pardon?
Is there a calendar back up on the house side?
Pardon?
Is-